All right, as we begin today's lesson chapter 5 of the Lamentation of Jeremiah, we have to go back to 2 Chronicles 35:25 to really get a picture of what we're going through today. It says there in 2 Chronicles 35:25, "Then Jeremiah chanted a lament for Josiah." In other words, he made up a song that was a mourning song. He was lamenting the death of Josiah. "And all the male and female singers speak about Josiah in their lamentations to this day." Josiah dies in 606 BC, and 2 Chronicles is not going to be written down to say this, which says these female and male singers chant or this or speak about this in their lamentations to this day. That's not going to be written for another 225 years. So the 2 Chronicles is saying, hey, what Jeremiah chanted in his lament is still being chanted today. Then he goes on saying, "They made them an ordinance in Israel." In other words, they made them a law in Israel that the lament over Jeremiah was to be repeated. And in fact, if you go to the Wailing Wall in Israel, they are either reading and lamenting certain psalms or out of the Lamentations. They know the Lamentations better than we do because they're lamenting the destruction of not only the first temple, but also the second temple. And it says, "And behold, they are also written in the Lamentations." Well, by the time that Ezra comes back 200 and something years later to write the Chronicles, Lamentations is put together. Those five Lamentations are booked together. They are to join together. They go together. And they're stuck right there with the prophecy of Jeremiah from 200 and something years before. And so they are firmly in the Hebrew Bible or the scrolls at that point in time. And so when Ezra comes along and he says this, they are there. Now, Lamentations chapter 1 did not fit that scenario because Lamentations chapter 1, look back at 586. Josiah dies in 606. Lamentations chapter 2 looked at what happened prior to this onslaught, this siege coming on. Chapter 3 deals with Jeremiah's affliction through his entire life. He starts off as a prophet in his teenage years. He says, "Lord, they're not going to listen to me." Well, sure enough, they didn't. They started mistreating him with the very first prophecy he says to the people. And that goes on from over the next period of time. He lives all the way and prophesies until 5 months after the fall. So that's what Lamentations 3 is about. It's about Jeremiah and his afflictions. Lamentation 4 that we saw last week is about the very week leading up to the day of August the 4th, 586 B.C. But Lamentations chapter 5 is different. It says nothing about Babylon. It says nothing about Nebuchadnezzar. It says nothing about this events that are going on here. It really and truly must be the lamentation that deals with the death of Josiah, Lamentations chapter 5, that is Jeremiah's chant about his death. Now, I don't know if I've said this to you, and I know I'm not said it the way I'm fixing to say it to you. All these five lamentations are songs, they're poems, they're chants, and they are somewhat... because in the original Hebrew, they had a rhythm and a rhyme to them. So they are manipulated to say something that you on the face of the page may not be able to see what they say unless you really and truly know the history of the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom, and specifically the history that's in the book of Jeremiah. I'll give you an example. "Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's soldiers and all the king's men could not put Humpty Dumpty back together again." Now, there's a famous little nursery rhyme that has to do with what? Do what? Come on, we're working on it. About a king who is killed and who's left the throne and the kingdom is taken over. Here's another one. Ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. That is the Black Death, where if you got that little spot on you and the ring came around you, they might as well go ahead and get ready, because you're going to die, they're going to burn you, and they're going to bury your ashes because of death. In fact, every single one of our nursery rhymes, whenever you as parents realized what they really meant, you went, oh, my child's learning this. Oh, my, you know, it's just, we're shocked when we go back and find out what the history is. And it's a way of saying things to other common people so that the authorities don't know what you're saying. Well, Jeremiah's like that in some sense, but in another sense, it is a song or a poem or a tale like those that I've just mentioned, those nursery rhymes, that tells a story that may on the surface not be seen. In fact, here's where we pick it up. Nebuchadnezzar is not even mentioned. Pharaoh, the king Necho, or Pharaoh of Egypt, has made a trip, and he's going to Assyria to see the Assyrian king, to actually battle the Assyrian king. And on the way, he sees Josiah, king of the southern kingdom, in the valley of Megiddo. And Pharaoh Necho, kills Josiah, takes him back to Jerusalem for them to bury. He takes what he thinks to be a good replacement for Josiah, the brother of Josiah, Jehoaz, and puts Jehoaz on the throne. But Jehoaz doesn't jihad with Necho very well. And in less than 3 months, Necho has to take Jehoaz off the throne and take him down to Egypt. Necho, following the same thinking that he did before, he puts another one of Josiah's brother on the throne, Eliakim, and changes his name to Jehoiakim. And he's going to serve for 11 years, but he has no authority. His authority is the authority of Necho. And in fact, Pharaoh Necho has left Egyptian soldiers and trusted counselors there in the throne room of Jehoiakim to make sure Jehoiakim rules the country as Necho wants it ruled. So that's where we pick it up. In this lamentation, we hear nothing about what's going to happen 90 days after this lamentation. 90 days after this lamentation, Nebuchadnezzar shows up on the scene and defeats Necho. But right now, Necho's in charge. And it all happens within the same year of 606 B.C. So we pick up. Verse 1 says, "Remember, O Lord, what has befallen us. Look and see our reproach." Here it is. Here's the reproach. For the first time in over 800 years, the king of that southern kingdom in Jerusalem does not have authority to rule the kingdom. It doesn't belong to that king any longer. It is ruled by a puppet king who really is a slave to the king of Egypt, to the Pharaoh. And so the ultimate fate of all the promised land is now out of the hands of the Jews. The Jews cannot return it. They cannot do as they please. The king of, even though Jehoiakim is on the throne, he cannot do anything to fight against Necho or to change things. He's got to do things as the Egyptians want. For all practical purposes, the land belongs to the Egyptians. Now, this is nothing new, folks. Nothing new at all. Whenever the Assyrians took over land, it was Assyrian land. When the Babylonians came in and overran Assyria and overran Egypt, it's Babylonian land. When the Persians came in, Cyrus the Great, his guys, and Darius come in, they take over the Babylonian land, it's Persian land. Alexander the Great comes in, takes over the Persian land, it's Greek land, wherever it is. Whenever the Alexander Great's men divide up into four generals, divide up the land to four different areas, one becomes Rome, one becomes the southern, the Egyptian area with the Ptolemies. We've got two other kings. They divide up the land. But lo and behold, those four generals start trying to fight each other to take over the land. When they get it, it's theirs. Well, go on down in history, because that's what we're talking about. When France conquered a country, it became French possession. When England conquered a country, we had English colonies over here in America. It's English country. When the Dutch got their land, it was Dutch country. When the Spaniards got their land, it was Spaniard country. And of course, our history in America is we had to decide, okay, we had to get Mexico overran Spain. So when it came to Texas, we had to end up getting it back from Mexico, which had gotten it from Spain, which then we had the Louisiana Purchase. Now, I don't remember what that was. That was some sort of French something. Yeah, that's right. His own. So we had to do, you see, some, they owned it when they conquered it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, whenever we went to the Gulf War, we should have made that the 51st state in America. But I wish we could have. If we'd been doing that in our modern day and time, Germany would be another state in America. And so would some of the other countries, if that's the way. We don't do that anymore, but that's the way it was done for many, many years. The country of the Southern Kingdom, it's ruled by a king that is in the bloodline and the heritage, but really it belongs and it's Egyptian property now. It says, remember, O Lord, what's befallen us. Okay, these Gentiles of Egypt, they've taken away all the Jewish sovereignty. There's no more Jewish. From the time that Joshua led the children of Israel across the Jordan River and they conquered Jericho, Jericho was Jewish property, sovereign rule, and they just kept taking it over. Well, it's been 800 something years since that has happened, and there's no sovereign rule anymore. Egyptians control. Verse 2, our inheritance has been turned over to strangers. Think I make this stuff up? It's right there in the text. Our houses to our aliens. These Egyptian strangers now control the land of Israel, and Necho has placed Jehoaz in place, then takes him off. He puts Jehoiakim in place, and he's going to rule, but everything is under the control of this Egyptian pharaoh by the name of Necho. Verse 3, we have become orphans without a father. Our mothers are like widows. In the southern kingdom, as was in the northern kingdom, the king was looked upon as not only the king, but the father of the kingdom. When the king of the south, Josiah, was taken off of the throne, he was the last king to rule the southern kingdom with complete power and sovereignty. They feel now like, and this is what Jeremiah is speaking about, that they've had a death, and they have had a death, and they're mourning that death, and they're in that time period of 30 days of mourning the death of Josiah. And there's no one to guide them in the kingdom any longer because they don't have control of the kingdom. In the past 4 months, we've got some very, very strong women who are now widows who have lost their husbands. Very strong. I mean, they took care of the books of the house. They took care of the everything going on, virtually bought the cars, bought the house, whatever. Husband just made the money, and they spent it. And those and controlled it, and were very good at the money management, by the way. And now the husband is gone, and they're on my doorstep because they just need to run something by somebody. You follow me? That's the way these widows are, these elders and leaders in 606 BC. Josiah is dead. They don't have a king to go to that they can trust. He's dead. They can't trust Jehoaz. They can't just Jehoiakim. They can't trust him because he's under control of the Pharaoh of Egypt. So they're really like widows with no true guidance above them that is the type of guidance that their household was used to. That's what Jeremiah is saying there. He goes on to say in verse 4, he says, we have to pay for our drinking water. Our wood comes to us as a price. Well, that's true because nothing belonged to them anymore. Now, folks, I got to bring this up. I know that most of you in here have got your houses paid for and you think they're debt-free, and you are debt-free in some sense, and you've got your house paid for. This is my house. I can do with this house anything I want to. And for all practical purposes, as long as you go down and get a permit, that is true. Warning right here, if you live in the city of Houston, do not go out and replace 5 boards on your fence without going down to the city of Houston to get a $95 permit, because the law is now, you can't do anything that fence without a permit. And if you're not the one that goes down and some Joe Blow goes down, it is your contractor, he's got to come back and get your signed and notarized signature to go get the permit. You cannot do that. You cannot put up a fence or replace it at all. You have to go get a permit. That's just the way it is. But let me make it even worse than that. You've got your house paid for. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. And once a year, you get a bill from, let's just say you live down in Clear Lake where I am. I get a bill from Harris County Flood, Galveston County Flood, because I pay two flood things. I pay Clear Creek ISD taxes. There's a bunch of other entities. You know what I'm talking about? If I don't pay those taxes on my land, my property that's paid for is not my property any longer. They come take it. In fact, back in the days whenever Samuel was the judge, you know, the judges were really like kings and they ruled over the people. Samuel was getting old to the point, this is in First Samuel chapter 8. Samuel is a little too old to go around the country and do the judging, so he sets up his two sons as judges, sends them down to Beersheba so they can judge from down there because he used to make the trip down there to judge. They are such horrible judges, these two boys of Samuel, that the elders of all of Israel come to Samuel and say, Samuel, we want a king instead of judges. We don't want your boys to judge over us. We want a king. Samuel goes, you don't want a king? You want a king? You know what a king will do to you? A king will come in, they'll tax you 10% of everything you have. Then they'll tax you for something else. And that's in 1 Samuel 8. Samuel knows what he's saying. They say, we don't care. We want a king. Just get us a king so we don't have to have your boys as our judge and kings. Samuel goes to the Lord and says, Lord, what am I to do? And the Lord says, Samuel, don't take it personal. They're not rejecting you. They're not talking about you. They're talking about me. They're rejecting me as their king. So you go on out there, you send them all back home, and then you go around and I'll show you who to select as king. And so Samuel goes around and finds a man, the son of a man who's lost his donkeys, and the son has gone out to go find the donkeys. And it happens in a little scenario where Samuel runs into that man, that tall, handsome man, head and shoulders over everybody else by the name of Saul, and anoints him king. Within 14 days, he sins so bad, Samuel says to him, your kingdom is going to be snatched out of your hands. And within 14 days, that's how bad the king is. And sure enough, right off the bat, they come to Samuel and said, he's taxing us. Samuel goes, I hate to tell you this, but I told you so. He didn't exactly say it like that in Hebrew, but that's close. All right, that's close to what he said, because that's what happened. Well, sure enough, here comes Necho. Here it is, 2 Chronicles 36, 3 through 4. We actually don't need 4, but here we go. Then the king of Egypt, that's Necho, deposed him at Jerusalem, that's Josiah's body, and imposed on the land a fine of 100 talents of silver and 1 talent of gold. Then the king made Eliakim, his brother, king over Judah and Jerusalem, and changed his name to Jehoiakim. But Necho took Joaz, his brother, and brought him to Egypt. Joaz did not work out because he did not quite jihad with Necho. Okay, it is true. They could not go get water out of the wells that they had dug themselves without paying a tax on it. They could not go get wood out of their own forest that they had planted and grown and nurtured for firewood or for a house without paying a tax on it, because the land and the wells that they had dug and once belonged to them no longer. They belonged to Necho. They belonged to Egypt. And such it is. Nothing has changed, has it? You just think you own something. Jeremiah, they owned it until Necho came in. They owned it until Josiah died. They didn't pay taxes on that type of stuff until then. They paid taxes on other things, but they were happy with what they did. Verse 5, our pursuers are at our necks. We are worn out. There is no rest for us. Who's the pursuers? Egypt. They said they're at our necks. It's really the picture in Hebrew of them being down with their face to the ground and the pursuer has their foot on the back of the neck. You know what that feels like. Some of you don't know what that feels like. If you're a debt-free person, you don't know what that feels like. But if you've not been a debt-free person, you know exactly what that feels like. You know what it was when you were younger. I'm saying this from personal experience. When you went out and bought you a car and made a note on it. Then you bought you some house or something like that and made a note on it. For me, I went out and bought also a sound system and made a note on it for the little group that I had. Then you get a credit card. Oh, credit cards, yeah, and you get them run up, yeah, and to where You go pay off the credit card so you can charge a little more. So the next week you can go pay off the credit card so you can charge a little more. And you really want to buy something else and charge a little more. So you go ahead and make another little payment on the credit card. And then lo and behold, you lose your job. And within 60 days, you wish you had never heard of the word telephone. Because it feels to you like, even though they're just way in the distance in India or Africa or someplace on the line talking to you, you feel like they've got you down on the ground and their foot is on their neck putting pressure on you. When are you going to pay? 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 You start robbing Peter to pay Paul and you start trying to figure out, how am I going to pay this? You start worrying for a job. You can't pay anything. God's got you exactly where he wants you, and you think it's they're sinful against you, but it's actually you. You shouldn't have been doing that. You're not supposed to make loans and notes and stuff like that. Shame on you. Shame on you. Solomon, as sinful as he was, but as great as he was too, says, take all of your investments and put them in 7 different baskets, yea, even 8, because you do not know what tomorrow may bring. Do not have all your eggs in one basket, he says. That's where we get that. Get it in 7, even 8 different investments, different places, because you don't know what tomorrow. For them, they felt like the pursuers were on their neck because they had come in. It says, we are worn out and there is no rest for us. Worn out. Ring, ring, ring. Is that going to be Chase? Is that going to be Capital One? Is that the mortgage company? Is that the bank? Is that the car finance company? Who is that on the phone? And you look down and you go, oh, by the way, I'm going to tell you this. Just in case you do have a telephone, which I know you do, and your creditors do have your phone number. If they ring your phone, you always pick it up and you always talk to them. You do not run from them. And if you have a message machine and they leave a message for you, you call them back and say, I'm responding to this message. Even though you do not have a dime or a penny to give them, you call them and tell them, I'm returning the phone call. I don't have a dime or a penny to give them. You know why? Because if they leave a message and you do not respond, that is a message left and received and left whenever they go to the court to place a reason why they should win against you. But if you've responded to every one of their phone calls and you've asked them to record, say also, mark down that I returned your phone call. They probably are going to hang up and not call you back for 7 days because you've responded. That's just the way it is. You want them to stop calling? Talk to them. Don't run from them. That's not even part of the lesson, but that's free. Well, that may be worth something to y'all. Go home and tell, as the Bible would say, go home and tell this to your children and your children's children, because most of us have children that don't know how to handle money and they're running from their creditors. There we go. Verse 6, we have submitted to Egypt and Assyria to get enough bread. The reason why they don't have enough bread is because they're being taxed so heavily on it. There's another reason too, but we're going to go with that one right now. We'll see the next one in a minute. Not only do they have to pay these talents to go and everything, Necho, we find in other places, requiring them to bring in so much of their crops. And if they don't have a good crop, it doesn't matter. They still have to bring in the amount of bushels. And if there's nothing left in the southern kingdom for them to eat off of, and it takes every bushel of grain just to pay what Necho requires of them, they have to pay Necho. And if they don't pay Necho, Necho's going to come this way. You can say that's paying through the nose. Do you know where that came from? Paying through the nose? You're going to love this. On the coastlands, on the western side of Europe, where Normandy and all this stuff was, and the French and Spain, when the Vikings were coming down, the Vikings came and they imposed a tax on the people just when they showed up. So when you saw the Viking boats come in, you knew they were coming to collect a tax. If you did not have saved up what they had told you they were going to collect the next time they came through, they would take their knife and they would cut the front of your nose. Therefore, you have paid through the nose. If you got 2 cuts, then you were really in trouble because the next time they came, okay, that's where that terminology comes from. Everything we say has something in its reality back in there. Well, you didn't need that. They went and they were trying to get supplies and things from the 2 countries who are around them, and God is not pleased with them because they are going to them instead of to him, and he considers that to be adultery. Had they just been faithful to the Lord all the years before, He would have provided for them. But no, they had to come along a king by the name of Manasseh. And Manasseh was an evil king. Even though he reigned for a long period of time, he is the king that started the downturn of the southern kingdom. When the northern kingdom is horribly, horribly idolatrous and sinful and adulterous towards the Lord and unfaithful to Him, the southern kingdom is virtually lily white until Manasseh. We often say there were 20 bad kings in the northern kingdom and 20 good kings in the southern kingdom. That's not really the truth. Manasseh was a horrible king and brought idolatry into where they were worshiping other gods. And in fact, by the time of Josiah, by the time of his death, I showed this to you in one of the other lamentation lessons that we study. The Lord has and is bringing the destruction upon the temple because of the sins of Manasseh. And he hadn't been king in 5 kingships. They're submitting to Egypt and Assyria just to get enough bread. Consider their desperate unfaithfulness. Verse 7, our fathers sinned and are no more. It is we who have borne their iniquities. It is we who have borne their iniquities. Manasseh is the one who sinned, and he's been dead for a long time. Then the elders and the leaders and the prophets followed and continued on with what Manasseh had started, and they're dead. And yet there's a corporate payment for the sin of the corporate sin of the people. You cannot listen, it only takes one bad administration to cause the corporate nation to suffer for dozens of years in the future, if not hundreds of years in the future. Let me give you an example. Boy, that sure got a rise out of y'all, didn't it? Listen, let me tell you what happened back in Waxahachie. Waxahachie, there's this thing called Super Collider. Do you know there are 2 colliders down at MD Anderson? This is amazing to me. We've got 2 colliders down at MD. That's where they, by magnets, send the stuff around, bust the atoms and the protons come off. And you've heard of proton therapy? Okay. They're doing that atom crashing while you're getting your proton therapy, because as soon as that proton is released, they have to use it. Because as soon as they turn off that machine, they can't save a proton's energy to do what they do. Instead of radiation, they do proton. When the machine turns off, they can't save it. It's dead. So they're shooting you with protons. They're making it in a collider. I think that's neat. I think it's awfully dangerous, but I think it's neat. Super collider. Texas wins it because of one of our fine congressmen over from the Beaumont area. And Ellis County wins the contract to put a 50-mile super collider around Waxahachie, Ennis, Maypearl, and all that area, Red Oak, all of Ellis County. But the deal was that Ellis County had to raise the funds to pay for the first 3 miles of that super collider. So Ellis County, which had been the cheapest taxing county in the state of Texas for many years, or among the cheapest, went out and borrowed the money, billions of dollars, and raised the taxes with a vote. The people voted for it. Yeah, we need a super collider. So we start building 3 miles, and we start buying up all the land in the path. In fact, Kay's grandfather's sister was the last to give up her land. In fact, 3 miles of the super collider was built, and they were about ready to start the next foot past the 3 miles. And whenever they went in with the police officers, the sheriffs, and took the great aunt off of her land in handcuffs, and while she is in the car, they have bulldozers to bulldoze the house down because she had left the land several times and gone back to live. So they just figured this out. They had to get her off. And they paid her the minimum amount. It was not very much money they paid her. Whatever they were buying, that was Ellis County bond money they had borrowed. Only to set her up, not even set her up, she had to go out and live with family is what happened outside of Maypearl. That money for the next foot of the super collider did not come, and it never came. And the super collider project was shut down 3 weeks after she was removed from her house. Then they offered to sell her back the land at 4 times what they had paid for it. And then when she finally died, they offered to sell it to the family, to give it back to the family, being nice, at 10 times what They had paid for it to sell it back because it was their eminent domain. They'd taken it, and they'd paid her the cheapest price. Because she had argued with them, they took it down to the very bottom. That's the way nations are. There's nothing new with that. Nothing new at all. Well, the problem is, the point of this is not so much how wrong that is. The point is, Ellis County is still paying for the super collider. And they've not turned it into anything. It needs to be a prison. They need to make an underground prison out of it. I mean, it's just a big old hole a long ways underground. It's huge. You could put the Guppy in there. You know what the Guppy is? A big airplane. You can put the Guppy in there. That's how big this thing is. It's huge. Well, they're not doing anything. It's just a big old hole in the ground. By the way, they had an earthquake there yesterday, or Thursday. Yeah, 2 point something. I bet it was because of that hole. Goes on, says, our fathers have sinned. Yeah, they sinned. Nations sinned. Yes, sir, were you going to say something?
Can you define iniquities
as they use it here? Sin. It's sin. It's just sin. It's a type of sin. There, iniquities is doing something where you absolutely know it's going against the law of God. There are other types of sins too. For instance, like another Hebrew word is the word that means to miss the mark. You've got a bullseye up here, and you're shooting at the bullseye, but you completely miss it and hit over here. That's one type. Another type of sin. Another type of sin is going past the mark, where you absolutely hit that bullseye dead on. But that arrow continues through the target and strikes something back behind, causing more problems than had it hit way over here. That's just as much a sin, too. Overstepping the bounds that you have is just as much a sin. That's like giving somebody authority, and they come in saying they handled everything right with authority, and then lo and behold, they overstep their bounds. That's just as much a sin. It's another word for sin, okay? This iniquity is where you sin because you know that you're breaking the law. And this is the sins of idolatry that they're breaking. That's what they've been doing. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make any graven images. And the southern kingdom had started doing it. And they did it, started it under Manasseh. They had great kings before that wouldn't allow it to happen. Manasseh comes in. Of course, after Manasseh comes Hezekiah. We got great kings. But it's the sin of Manasseh that causes the problem. They start bringing in this idolatry. Slaves rule over us. There is no one to deliver us from their hands. Who are the slaves? Jehoaz was a slave. He was the king put in there. And Jehoiakim's a slave. Yes, they're kings sitting on the throne, but they don't have any control. They're slaves of the king of Pharaoh of Egypt. Verse 9. We get our bread at the risk of our lives because of the sword in the wilderness. History tells us this is what happened. When the southern kingdom lost its control and power, they couldn't wage war against anyone. They really couldn't even protect themselves. So the Arabs from down southeast would come up and rob their crops. Well, they go out to say, get off of our crops, this is our food. The Arabs would kill them. This is like 160, 70, 80 years ago when you'd be out somewhere in West Texas or something like that and you go out to work your fields and you see a bunch of Comanches show up. And their intent's to kill you, to get food off of your crop, because you're nothing to them, to raid you. That's what the Arabs were doing to the southern kingdom, the exact same thing. So they had to go out and they risked their lives just to get food off of their own crops. Our skin has become as hot as an oven because of the burning heat of famine. You got to understand, there's not a famine in the land because of natural things going on at this point in time. There's not a famine in the land. The famine is because they don't have food. Remember, Necho has taken over their country. They've got all this tax they have to pay, so they don't have enough food to eat because there's not enough money to go around. There's not enough resources and supplies to go around. And so everything has come to a slow halt, and people don't have enough money to buy food or to get food or to gain crops. And so, according, I had to look this up, hunger, when you're hungry, it causes your pores to dry up and the skin to absorb the heat of the day. So whatever heat's out there, it makes it hot for you. The change in the control of the government set a famine in motion, which, by the way, we're under the same type of thing going on right now. The changes in our government have set a famine in motion that exacerbated the effects of the scorching heat. They're sitting out there, they want water. They can't even get water out of their own. If they don't have money to buy their own water, they can't even get their own water because the Egyptians are in control. They ravish the women in Zion, the virgins in the cities of Judah. Hey, that's nothing new. That's nothing new at all. The Egyptians are doing what they want with the women. Hey, the Persians did what they wanted with the women when they took over. So did the Babylonians. So did the Assyrians. So did the Egyptians before them. So did the Romans. So did the Spaniards. So did the English people when they came through from the history of our colonies and what has happened to us. I'm not so sure back in World War I and World War II, our folks didn't do it towards the Germans and others and their women. You never know. It happened during the Civil War between the North and the South. As houses were taken over and women were ravished. There's nothing new here. Years before Jeremiah says this, he prophesied it was going to happen. Look at Jeremiah 6:12. Their houses shall be turned over to others, their fields and their wives together. Together what? Turned over to others, for I will stretch out my hand against the inhabitants of the land, declares the Lord. The Lord tells it to Jeremiah. Jeremiah tells it to them. Sure enough, it's fulfilled. Sure enough. Elders and princesses. Princesses were hung by their hands. Elders were not respected. Princesses and elders who rebelled against Necho's authority were decapitated. They were beheaded. And their bodies were hung by their hands on walls. Nothing new here, folks. Go back to King Saul. King Saul falls on his own sword, kills him, his own self. And whenever the Philistines find him, they take him, they behead him as if they had killed him. And they take the bodies of his sons and behead them, take the heads off, and they take the bodies and they hang them on a wall. And there they're going to be eaten by the birds and they're going to hang there until the birds and the other animals come and devour them. With Saul and his sons, the Jebus Gileads, who Saul had protected them years before, and actually Joshua had protected them also, they marched all night to go and get the bodies off the walls because they knew what had happened to them. They burned them. They cremated them. Saul, King Saul, and his sons were cremated and they buried them underneath an oak tree. Only for later on, many years, more than 20 years later, when there's a death of Mephibosheth, David comes in and he gets Mephibosheth and he goes back and digs up the ashes of Saul and his sons and he buries them all together in a memorial out from underneath that tree. Cremation in the Old Testament of Jewish people because of the decay of the body going on, hung on the tree. But that's not, it even goes back further than that. You remember back when Joseph is over in jail? He goes in jail at 17 years old. He's not going to come out of that jail until he's 30 years old. But while he's in jail, he's got the opportunity to rise to the occasion and become the head trustee of the jail in Pharaoh's jail over in Egypt. And lo and behold, there is a hiccup that comes along. The Pharaoh has a dream about a butcher and a baker. And lo and behold, they go and get Joseph, and Joseph gives the interpretation to the dream, and he gives it to them, and here's what it goes. Actually, I'm sorry, I told you that wrong. It's not the Pharaoh's dream, it's the butcher and the baker's dream. Here we go. And Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift your head from you. Got that? Chop off your head. And will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you. It goes back even further than that. I wonder if we could go back in time with a time capsule, if we could introduce waterboarding and see if the pharaohs would use it down. I imagine they would. Yeah, that's a fairly new thing we do. Actually, it's really not. You know, the Chinese did this thing where they'd put you down and just, it wasn't waterboarding, it was a drip, 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 and you'd go crazy, crazy, dripping. Bloop, bloop, bloop. I once had a secretary that her voice was like a drip. Not here, in a different church. And I'd come every, it's just, it grates your nerves, just, you know. Whoop, 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 whoop. I was ever so thankful when the Lord moved me instead of her. Young men, here in verse 13. This is one of these you won't get unless you know the history. Young men worked at the grinding mill and youth stumbled under the load of wood. Grinding mill. Young men did not grind. Women did the grinding mill. That's the reason why they put Samson at the grinding mill, because it was humiliation to him. Men did not turn the grinding mill. Only women did. Young men were responsible for hauling the wood, but now they're turning the grinding mill. Who's hauling the wood? The children are hauling the wood, and they cannot bear the weight of the load at all. Jeremiah is saying everything's upside down. Everything has gone to kelter. Everything's different. Nothing that we respected, nothing that we lived by in the past is happening. Nothing at all. Verse 14, elders are gone from the gate, young men from their music. What are we talking about there? Listen, when Necho came in, let me back up. Elders for over 800 years would go to the gates of the cities. And when somebody had a law case or a dispute with somebody else, they'd go to the elders and have it settled, like in a court of small, just think of it as a justice of the peace small claims court. If you wanted to go and buy and sell a tract of land, you would go and in front of the elder, you would trade a shoe with each other. And having each other's shoe was proof that the land was traded and sold. And the elder at the gate justified it and made it a done deal. With Necho, there is no more elders at the gate for one reason, because it's under military rule. Number two reason is, it's time of the mourning of their king, and no transactions happen during the time of the mourning of the king. Go over to Acts chapter 12. Acts chapter 12, end of 12. Barnabas and Paul, are about ready to go on a mission trip, but they got a problem. The problem is Herod has died, and there is a national time of mourning for 30 days, and all the old Jewish stuff of fasting and everything was required during that 30. All they got all that stuff out of Egypt and brought it over, and they're doing it. And Paul and Barnabas cannot start their missionary journey until the national time of mourning is over. Well, folks, here it is. Nothing during this time is going to happen until that time of mourning is over. So these elders are not going to be at the gates any longer during that 30 days because they're time of mourning. Business stopped back in those days. Commerce stopped. The market stopped for 30 days. We don't do that, but we do put our flags at half staff. I never will forget back when John F. Kennedy died, that the flags were at half staff, and for all practical purposes, there wasn't anything open in Mangum, Oklahoma during that 30 days. I mean, business was down. I remember my dad saying, boy, I'd be glad when this 30 days is over because this lumber yard's about ready to, got some bills it's got to pay, and we got to sell some lumber because everything just slowed down. It was a national time of mourning for 30 days. Young musicians from their music, nothing has changed, folks. You've got all those young guys. Every city back in those days was filled with music from old men and young men. Young men who grown up to be old men and played their old favorite songs. Yes. And the young musicians did not quite play the same music of the older men. So the tradition was, whenever it was a national time of mourning, only those older men played those hymns out of their hymnal as dirges. They did not allow those younger men to play the rock and roll and stuff like they had been doing on their lyres. Can't you just imagine a young man playing rock and roll on his lyre? Or blues or something like that? It was a thing older men played the dirges. What's interesting is history tells us that as those younger men became older, they learned those older dirges to play in times of mourning because they were only played in times of mourning. And they would soon, whenever they became older, played those dirges when it was their time. So the young men are not playing in this time of death. Joy of our heart has ceased. Our dancing has turned into mourning. The joy has ceased. The dancing turned into mourning. About 7 months ago, Zeke lost his wife, Cindy. Now, Zeke loves two things. He loves witnessing to prisoners, and he loves playing the harmonica. Do not ask him today if he's got a harmonica in his pocket, because he will pull it out and he will serenade you with it. But I never will forget, in those days right after Cindy had died, some were trying to cheer him up to see if he would play something for them, and he would not pull it out. Why? Because his heart had been crushed. His joy had ceased. His whole soul had been turned into mourning, and his desire to dance with that harmonica and play that music and to sing and all that was gone. And it's not even really quite back yet, because he still grieves, as he should. The crown has fallen from our heads. Woe to us, for we have sinned. The crown has fallen. Yeah. Oh, there's a king over on the throne, but he's under the thumb of Necho. Our crown, our sovereignty has fallen. It has fallen and it's not going to come back. Even whenever Jesus comes, let's see, 430 years later, when Jesus comes and Israel's kind of in control of her land after they've come back from the exile, they're under the rule of the Romans. They don't really have any authority. Why do you think they had to go to Pilate? They couldn't do anything without going to Pilate, a Roman official. Now, they could go to Herod, king of Jews, but he didn't want anything to do with it because had he accepted or declined the premise, then he was going to end up with one side or the other being against him, and the two sides were too great. So he let Pilate make the decision because they needed Roman authority, because the Jews had already been stripped of their authority to kill anybody. They could not even stone him without without Roman authority any longer. The crown had fallen. Woe to us, for we have sinned. Absolute power of the southern kingdom was gone. Because of this, our heart is faint. Because of these things, our eyes are dim. Yeah. See, in the past, they had this bright eye, and they were going to barrel down the road, no matter whether it was right or wrong. But now, their hope's gone. Their hope is gone. And you know what that's like? You know what it's like to be barreling down with a wonderful business or whatever, and the economy comes along, and lo and behold, you have to shut it down, and you go, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Or you've had your retirement investment someplace and the market takes a fall and you've lost half of your money. You go, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You don't know what you're going to do. The brightness of your eyes is gone. A person has come to look at our property that we've got for sale for the school. And she's young and she's right out of college and her dream is to have a school. And she said to me, she says, why did y'all not open the doors? And I said, listen, you got to realize this. You're on the beginning of your 30-year dream. We're on the end of our 30-year dream. And you know, it does come that. It comes, you're tired of going to the grindstone. You're tired every day. And we all get to that point. We all get to that point. Jeremiah's looking back, oh, our eyes are dim. We're faint. We're faint. We can't see any longer. Because Mount Zion lies, which lies desolate. Foxes prowl in it. Whoever controlled Mount Zion controlled the political power of the nation. Egypt controls Mount Zion now. For the first time in over 800 years, no, for the first time in over 500 years, Mount Zion is not controlled by a Jew. David went in, took it away from the Canaanite Jebusites, and set it up as his throne in his seventh year as king. Now the Pharaoh of Egypt controls it. The crown's down. The crown has fallen. For all practical purposes, the Jewish leadership on Mount Zion is desolate. And the foxes, those old foxes of Egypt, have stripped away the power of the Jews. And they've got overseers there to make sure that the Jewish puppet king who is there does not do something that that Pharaoh would not like. You, O Lord, rule forever. Your throne is from generation to generation. Oh, Jeremiah's getting personal now. You know, the generations of the throne for Israel only lasted a few generations, about 40, 43, 44. But the Lord's throne will last forever. The power of the Jewish nation on Mount Zion only lasted for a few years in reality in God's plan and time, but the Lord's power reigns forever and forever, spans all the generations, spans all the time, will not be taken away. Then Jeremiah says to the Lord, why do you forget us forever? Why do you forsake us so long? Now Jeremiah had already presented the Lord's plan in the Scripture long before this is written. He had already told them in the Scripture that they were going to be overthrown and they were going to go into exile for 70 years. That message had already been written down by Barak and had ended up over in the hands of Daniel over 600 to 700 miles away, straight 600 miles, but to go around is actually more than that. And Daniel has already recorded in his letters that he's writing that he's been reading the book of Jeremiah and he's realized that the time of the exile is going to be 70 years. And he's looking, he said, okay, here it is. It's going to be time. Jeremiah already knows the time. He knows the promise of the Lord. He knows what is happening. He knows about the exile is going to go, but they doesn't know that He doesn't know that within 90 days or 3 months or 30 days to 90 days, Nebuchadnezzar, who's not even in this lamentation, is going to show up on the scene, and he's going to overthrow Necho, the Pharaoh, and he's going to take out his first exiles. And the exiles are going to be Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and about 15,000, I think, more, maybe more than that. He's going to take out on the first takeout. There's going to be several takeouts as he keeps coming back and taking more and more people out. Jeremiah says, why do you forget us forever? He knows they're not. The Lord's not forgotten him forever. He's promised he wouldn't forget them forever. Restore us to you, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew our days as of old. That's just basically Jeremiah saying, oh, if we could just go back like we were before Necho showed up. Surely we could get back there. Can't you restore the former glory that we were in? Lord, can't you renew us and get us back there? By the way, that never happens. Absolutely never happens. Things never go back the way they were. You can try all you want. You can have your favorite little town and you can move away and spend your entire life over doing a job someplace, and then you decide you're going to return home. Well, when you return home to live that you haven't been there in 30 years, it is never going to be like it was when you left. Not at all. Not at all. Never will forget Van Mangum. Not alive any longer. Back in 1967, my father had died about a year before, and Mary Van Mangum was a Mary Kay lady, and my mother wore Mary Kay makeup, and she was at the table, and I was sitting off the side doing homework, and Van said to my mother, "Oh, Lavina, if Sterling was just alive, they've got this new procedure, this heart procedure transplant thing down in Houston. And had he been alive, he probably could have gone down there because he was such a healthy man and all that. And it probably would have helped him." Of course, when that procedure happens, what's going on is they've put that man on the transplant heart and he's not going to live very long, okay? But I remember what my mother said. My mother said, "It's no use to hope for something that you can't hope for." Made a big impression on me. Big impression. There are just some things you can't hope for. You can't go back. There's no going back. The grass is not greener back where you were, because it's not the same. That's what the Lord Jeremiah is praying for, but he knows better. But he picks up the last verse. He says, "Unless you have utterly rejected us and are exceedingly angry with us. Why have you forgotten us so long? Why do you forsake us so long? Restore us to you, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew us as in the days of old, unless you are utterly rejected us and you are exceedingly angry with us." Jeremiah knows where the Lord is. He is exceedingly angry with them, but he's not utterly rejecting them. He's taking them to where he said he was going to take them. He is fulfilling the prophecies that he said long before. You can get it back in Deuteronomy chapter 28. You can get it in the prophecies of Isaiah. You just go back to the prophecies. They're there. This day was set to come. And it's not over yet because it's in this is all about 606 B.C. The kingdom, the temple, is not going to fall to 586 B.C., the city of Jerusalem is not going to be destroyed until 586 B.C. There's some years in there that have got to happen. But Jeremiah, in his woe is me point in time, which we all get in our lives, was just crying out to the Lord, crying out to him in wonderment in his time of personal mourning because of the fall of the crown of Josiah, the king. And for all practical purposes, the fall of the sovereign rule of the promised land was over. And it was. Until 1947, when the United Nations comes along and makes a decision to try to reenact and fix what they had made the decision for back in 1917, 18, and 19. To make Israel a sovereign state again. And they set up an area for Palestine, which was what we would call now Jordan, but Palestine did not want Jordan, so they came over on the other side. The decree from 1917, 18, and 19 was not held to, so in 1947, the United Nations came along and made the decree that Israel would be turned back into its own land and the Palestinians could go back to their land, which is supposed to be over in the Jordan area. And in 1948, the day came for it to happen. And when it happened, only about 3% of the land of Israel was under Israel's control, and they had to start that three-year battle to take their land back from the Palestinians. And for all practical purposes, to this day, the battle has not stopped for that land. And you know, it won't stop. It won't stop. Until the Lord whose throne is everlasting, the Lord whose kingdom will never end, the Lord whose kingdom will span all generations comes to sit on His throne. And that's still in our future. And that ends the last lamentation of Jeremiah that's recorded in our Bible. Lord Jesus, we thank You for this lamentation. May we not be guilty of committing sins today that our children will have to pay for. May we learn that lesson. May we not do some things that place such heavy burdens on our children that they cannot bear. But most of all, may we not be guilty in this generation that's alive today of worshiping idols and having adulterous relationship with other nations and with others, in fact. May we place our faith and trust in You and rely on You and You alone. And may we be faithful to Your word. For Your word, O Lord, is a light unto our feet, to light our paths in the way that we should go. And that is Your way, Lord. May we find that way and may we stay on that path. Lord, we love You in Your Son's name. Amen.